Okay, so let's peek behind the curtain of one of the favorites by talking to John Linnell from They Might Be Giants. John starts out by first telling us about their band's name.
It's the name of a movie, and the movie has no bearing on what it is that we're doing. We just thought it sounded like a good band name, and without really even having a fuller explanation of why, I guess. It just seemed like a good name. It doesn't refer to us for anyone who's still confused on that point. We don't think of ourselves as potential giants.
Ah, well, do you ever play around with the title at all? Do you change it up for appropriate topics? Like, you could have said like they might have acromegaly for the science element.
Yeah, we've certainly heard all the jokes. I must say. It seems to me that we had a period where we would doctor up posters for products of ours that we were signing by crossing out the ants part, and just it would say they might be GIs, and then we'd draw ourselves with like army helmets. Or another one was we'd cross out the GI and have it be they might be ants, and then we'd put antennas and mandibles on our heads. We thought it was funny.
Well, the gastrointestinal doctors must have had a field day with that, too.
Well, they might be GI tracts.
Yeah, well,
yeah, it's not. Yeah, that never occurred to us.
So now, you just released an album for science, basically, Here Comes the Science. This was actually released about a year ago. So why science?
Well, we've done, for the Disney label that we were producing these DVDs under the auspices of Disney, we had done an alphabet themed DVD, and then the follow up was
Here Come the ABCs
obvious,
and the 1-2-3s.
Yeah, the obvious 1-2-3s came after. So we thought maybe we'd take it in a completely different direction, and in some ways have something in the subject that we could maybe make ourselves work a little harder at, and sink our teeth into. I think there's something, in a way very open-ended about writing songs about the alphabet and about numbers, but science really is a very specific topic, and you can't mess it up, you got to get it right.
Oh, you can. And sometimes that provides, a little bit more discussion.
Yeah, it's funny when you get it wrong, but the idea is we felt like we would be sitting up straighter if we were trying to turn in a more serious assignment like science. Well, then, so that was good. It was great for us, actually.
Sure. Yeah. Well, what inspired, first of all, the children's albums?
No, it was actually very much of a sort of sidebar. We were doing a lot of other projects in the late 90s, and Rounder suggested that we might want to try recording a children's CD. They just thought, why not? And we really weren't thinking very hard of that. We thought, oh, sure. Well, we were spending a lot of time in the studio. We thought this would be an interesting side project. And the CD, once it finally came out, it completely, surpassed our expectations. And I think everyone else's, as far as that response from it, the number that we sold was just way beyond what we were imagining. So it suddenly actually seemed like a career move, even though it had not been planned that way.
Yeah. One of our listeners had said, we posed a few questions if they wanted to join in, and they said the combination of the quality of the songs and the animations really make it stand out from any other children's albums out there. It's good enough for adults to listen to and enjoy as well. Or is that the ploy?
We were trying not to define it too carefully, the first children's CD, but we did actually articulate this idea to ourselves that we didn't want grown-ups to hate having to listen to it over and over again.
That's a good point.
We knew it was something that's true of any children's movie or or CD is that there's going to be a lot of repeated viewings.
Is Disney listening to you here?
They really appreciated that. I think that they probably, you know, have the same concerns as we do, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, imply or guarantee success, you know. And there's plenty of stuff that's really successful that is unbearable for adults to listen to over and over again. In other words, it wasn't so much of a. I don't think it was really about whether it would be a successful, commercially successful CD. It's just, would we feel okay about ourselves inflicting it on parents, you know?
Yeah. Well, as a father of 3-year-olds and as a fan of They Might Be Giants, I profusely thank you for that, because it makes the minivan rides much more enjoyable.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you for saying that. I mean, I think anything gets annoying if you listen to it enough times. So, you know, I would say that there is a threshold for even I would say there's a threshold for our stuff, but we're hoping that it comes later, you know. Yeah. Maybe the 20th listening is the part where you start begging the child to try listening to something else.
Make it stop. Okay, so now let's get back to the album here. Do either of you have like any specific interest in science? Obviously, you span things like biology, chemistry, paleontology,
yeah,
space, physics, even dabble in computer science, environmentalism. You know that. Do either of you have a specific area which you were like, oh, I love this DNA stuff, or I would say
that we both have a general interest in science. We like talking about science. We don't mostly know what we're talking about, but we like the topic. And I think on top of that, and maybe more importantly, we have a philosophical interest in science. We like the idea of science. We like science as a way of thinking, and we want to promote that in the world. You know, we think it's a good thing. It's a good way to look at everything, and it's not simple or obvious. I think there's something actually counterintuitive about science that makes it worth thinking a little bit about. You know, that a lot of what makes science rigorous and produce good results is the aspect of it that is, you know, and this is more and more true as we move along, the aspect of it that's not obvious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reminded of this. Somebody said, well, you know, I think this was a conversation someone had with Ludwig Wittgenstein, if I can bring him up in this conversation, that somebody said to him, you know, of course, back in the pre-Copernican days, it looked to everyone as if the Earth were flat, or as if the Earth, as if the Sun went around the Earth, and that's sort of a truism, I think, that everybody thinks. Well, that's just the way it appears, that you look around and you see the Earth, and it appears flat to your eye, and it appears as if the Sun is going around the Earth, just because from where we stand, that's true. But Wittgenstein said this weird, interesting thing that I'm still pondering, which is, what would it have looked like if it looked as if the Sun were going around the Earth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a kind of a weird stink bomb in this conversation, I guess.
Well, no, I mean,
I don't know where to go with that.
Well, you got science educators that are listening, but I always think about this too, because when I talk about the process of science with my students, one of the things I tell them is that you rarely ever have that, you know, eureka moment, like I've got it. But you know, you often more get the things like, that's interesting. You know, why did that happen, or what could have happened differently? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Really, how science does work.
I think the thing about like a lot of contemporary science is stuff where when you're told it, it's not obvious. You don't go, oh, of course. Why didn't I think of that? You go, really? That's weird. You know, and that's true of it's true just as much of, you know, physics as it is of evolution, and any of those topics. They're weird facts. They're interesting, and they do ultimately have these beautiful. They lead to these beautiful and more complicated and more consistent pictures of reality, but they are not obvious. They're weird, in fact, and that's part of what makes them beautiful, in a way.
Hmm. Well, you obviously are intelligent. You got a sense of humor and a musical ability. How do you swing all three?
I think that John and I both feel like we are working with what we've got. You know, we are definitely not educators, and we're not, as I said, we're not experts in science, but we, I think, maybe have the advantage of having a layman's perspective on this stuff, and that makes it, maybe in a way, it gives us access to a layman audience, to a lay.
Sure, our perspective, that's different than, sometimes as educators we get, and as scientists we kind of get caught in, well, can't you see that? It's obvious. And I think that sometimes you're right, that the layman's perspective might be helpful there. Sounds like you had advisors on the content.
Correct. Yeah, we would never have gotten this off the ground if we didn't have somebody who actually knew this stuff up and down, who was an expert checking it for us. And, we had more than one person, but mainly we had...
Eric Siegel.
Yes, our friend at the... New York Hall of Science. Eric Siegel was on hand to tell us exactly what we were getting wrong and how to explain it in a way that didn't lead kids in the wrong direction. I think that, you know, one of the things about teaching science is it's not just about getting the facts right. It's also about making it sort of clear, making it make sense. And that's something that, you know, is really, it's not a simple thing. It's, in a way, it's,
Well, if we had the answer to that, we wouldn't have any problems with the science test scores, you know.
Yeah, and so I mean, really, we didn't want this to be a list of true facts about science. I think that would have been horrible and punishment for... you know, for kids, who would have driven kids away from science. I think that, you know, the real challenge is to make it clear and make it simple and interesting, and that's something where you can't just write down all the facts and expect kids to, you know, eat it up. I think it's actually it's a real job to make it all make sense and make it comprehensible, you know. And that's, I mean, something, I don't know whether we got it really, we did a really good job with that, but that's what we were shooting for. And we had the invaluable assistance of the animators on this project,
sure.
Who many of whom took something, you know, they were taking the songs that we'd recorded, the demo versions, and animating them, and in so doing, really made a lot of things that were confusing a lot clearer, I think, partly by being interested in the topic themselves and thinking of creative ways to make sense out of the material. You know, so I really have to credit those guys. We John and I were really bowled over when we saw the animations that came back, because it really made a huge difference.
Well, I was on pins and needles waiting for the album to come, and of course, as a science educator, I was kind of thinking about, all right, so did they get the content right? And I was happy with it. I mean, there was a lot of great things in there, and I use a lot of the I ordered two albums, one for school and one for home, and you know, I use a lot of it as teasers within, you know, things that I teach. You know, like, oh, we're gonna talk about elements, so we were going to bring up the Elements song, and even the, you know, science is real, because I like to talk about the process of science and what it is and what it isn't and that kind of stuff, so that's a nice intro as well.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, like, doing it, we learned enough about it that I almost feel like we could go back and do it again and get it more fine-tuned, you know, because in the process of not just making the material, but also talking about it after the fact, you know, it started to seem like some ideas were more, you know, that deserved more emphasis than others. I mean, for example, it seemed to me that the idea of falsifiability is really at the center of the scientific method, and in a way, I kind of wish that we had emphasized that a little more. There's a song called "Put to the Test."
Yes.
On the DVD, and that's the one place where it gets sort of touched on. You know, the idea. It's the bridge of that song, I think, that says, "Find a way to show what would happen if you were incorrect." You know.
Yes.
And I sort of wish we could put that in boldface somehow.
Yeah.
You know, because that seemed to me like kind of the crux of the whole thing.
Have you gotten any criticism on any of the tracks or the content? You know, you have a couple of those dreaded content things like evolution and environment, and then there's talking about the planetary count. I mean, did you break any little kids' hearts with Pluto?
Well, we sort of. I have to say, just to address that last one, we
you did tiptoe around it a little bit.
We kind of dodged the question, I would say, and in a way, I felt like vindicated. We spoke to Ira Flatow, who
yes.
does the Science Friday podcast, and I think that I completely agree with his position on it, which is the planets don't care whether they're planets or not planets. It's not really a scientific question. So it's just those are our names for those objects that orbit the sun, and we can call them whatever we want. And so I think that just having a list of what's up there, our names for the parts of the solar system was enough, I think. And the name of the song is How Many Planets, but it, of course it goes unanswered.
I felt
okay about that.
Well, and we've talked to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who was at kind of the crux of that matter too, and you know,
he's pretty much fallen on the side of Pluto is out, right?
That was the one thing he said is the process is the most interesting thing, you know, like discussing it and figuring out that this is how science works is more important than, you know, a planetary count. Who cares about the number? I mean, mm-hmm. if the kindergarten teacher's worst, you know, nightmare is that, you know, he or she has to take down a ninth planet or redo an acronym, I mean, well, okay, that I guess that's how that works. So, you know, that's part of that there.
So that's what Neil's position was. It doesn't matter, but
well, I think
he does
say it does matter, but the process is very important, and understanding
right.
you know the process of science in determining that you know that's more important. So at least that's kind of what we got out of him there. But you know he's kind of
right.
dodgy sometimes. He might completely go against it. You know, who knows? Did you get any like hate mail about Pluto, or did you get any criticism about evolution?
No, nothing about that. You know, I think that there's a kind of if you go on YouTube and look at the videos there's it's almost like bait for cranks, you know.
Sure.
And I would just discount the YouTube comments as any part of a reasonable dialogue, because it tends to be the most irate weirdos and people who may not even believe what they themselves are writing.
They usually get fed from somewhere else.
Are the ones writing the comments there. Other than that, I would say we've gotten, you know, pretty good, pretty positive feedback. There were a couple of mistakes that were just technical mistakes that people were quick to identify. Like the video for the song about the colors accidentally transposed indigo and violet, I believe. And we heard quite a lot about that.
The rainbotologist will get you on that.
The rainbotologists were after us for that one. But other than those kind of things, like little technical slip-ups, I think that the general vibe was pretty positive. And, you know, I mean, the other thing is I don't think we were very hard-line, aside from acknowledging that evolution exists. There's no like political agenda
sure.
on the record. You know, we're really just talking about fairly established scientific topics.
Sure. Now, obviously, let's talk a little bit about track 9 and 10. The, you know, why does the sun shine, and You know, why does the sun really shine? And as one of my listeners says, please tell us why the sun does shine. None of this. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas crap. And there was obviously a change there. You must have gotten some prior flack for this.
Well, it wasn't so much flack. It's just that we became aware that this original song that we'd been covering for quite a long time, which was written, I think, in the early 60s.
Oh, really?
Came up at a time when it was not fully understood that...
They didn't even know about plasma back then.
Yeah, no, exactly. That the sun was, and I guess most of the matter composing the universe, in fact, was composed of atoms that were separated from the electrons. In other words, the electrons were not attached to
their... Yeah, the delocalized electrons, yeah.
And as a result,
that's a great way of explaining it, because you just say that, and that's how science works. You know, this is written in the 60s when we knew this, and as we've known more, we actually hit a remake.
Right. So exactly, I think we felt like it was actually valuable to include the original song, which is a great song, by the way, that we didn't write, and then include the revision as a sort of an illustration of how science is continually being looked at and, you know, addressed and occasionally revised.
Illustrators must have had a field day with that one, because it looks like that one seems like they had the most fun with it.
It does. It's very fun to watch the stuff. I know that these guys who do it work really hard and they're staring at a computer screen and moving little objects back and forth. I think there's probably a lot more perspiration for them than inspiration, but they're a lot of fun. Certainly, a lot of fun for us.
As I was preparing this over breakfast one day, I was getting some questions ready, and my own children over a bowl of cereals asked me if mice like candy canes. So I'd like to pose that question to you. Do mice like candy canes? Do you have any knowledge?
Mice, I can tell you from having a house in upstate New York, mice like peanut butter, and if you leave food out, they like most of it, I would say. Unfortunately,
that's the problem. They like most food.
This is completely off topic, but we've been having a war with mice, in our place, actually. But we've discovered, in fact, this is maybe an unpleasant thing to bring up, but if you're trying to set a trap, I think peanut butter is the number one attractant for mice. It's the one thing that they can't seem to resist.
You could have another song about, where do mice go after they get caught in a trap? So now, which are some of your favorite songs off of the album? Which have gotten, the most requests?
We play the song Paleontologist pretty much in every show,
That's
was
a great
our
one.
Bass player, Danny Weinkoff, cooked that one up, and that is sort of an obvious, fun rocker. The song Meet the Elements, we have played that one in every show, I think. As far as the science stuff, it's always, I think when you're doing a live show, it's maybe too much to expect that people are going to hear all the words while you're performing them live and learn the information,
and
learn about the content, exactly. We try and go for the tuneful ones, I think, when we're performing live. We've got a pretty good number of them on the DVD.
Sure, any...
We do the Roy G. Biv one,
sure.
I'd say, pretty much every show.
Any songs or ideas that didn't make the cut? It's hard to rhyme with diabetes or melting polarized caps is kind of depressing, that kind of stuff.
Right. Let me think. We had a song, let's think. There was a song about, about, I'm trying to remember, was Waves on the...
Waves was an Waves Amazon exclusive.
That was an extra track, right? It was
a
bonus
track. You can only get it off of Amazon.com.
Waves did not make the cut, unfortunately. And part of the problem with Waves was that we made a video, which we really liked, which apparently violated every bylaw of Disney animation, because you're not supposed to show it was a kid jump, the first line of the song is a kid doing a cannonball into the swimming pool. And
you're not supposed to show what things aren't supposed to do?
Well, you're supposed to show the kid wearing water wings, I guess.
Oh, of course.
He's going to be jumping in the water. So that was enough for them to, originally they said, well, can you change the lyric? And so we tried just ball, as in a ball going into a swimming pool. And nobody liked that.
Yeah, you lose some artistic,
so it just became so controversial, that particular one, for sort of the smallest reasons, that it did not make the cut.
Sure. Do you have any plans for future, like you've done, ABC's 1, 2, 3, science? Do you have history next? Because you already have Istanbul.
We really have gotten loads of suggestions, and we had a joke answer, which we have kind of kept recycling, which, I think that we really don't know what would be an appropriate next move, but we felt like after the Homeland Security, office was set up, that that we could do one called "There Goes Your Civil Rights." that was the one answer that made everybody laugh.
Know your threat levels.
And yeah, exactly. Something about civic issues. But we never really nailed that one down. So we don't have a plan for the next educational DVD.
Well, great. Well, we'll leave you with this last question then. Do you have any advice for science teachers out there, or anything you'd like to tell the science educators?
I'm sort of in this inferior position, I would say, to a science educator. I think that their problems are worse than ours, which is they have to actually teach the stuff. We are just trying to get people interested in the topic.
Well, sometimes that's half the battle. So
it is. It absolutely is. Yeah. But as far as actually teaching the stuff comprehensively, I really have no, I don't have a leg to stand on. I think that we, in a way, we sort of get away with this thing of just talking around the subject, I think, on the science record. And I hope it makes it seem interesting and fun, but we did not deign to offer a complete course in any way on any science topic,
Sure.
So I would say my one thing I would say to science teachers is, you guys are great. Keep up the good work.